It's Shelly Wright. It's Shelly Wright. Hey, what is going on, Sam Steele, producer of Speaking of Strange with the aforementioned Miss Shelly Wright here on a very special episode. Shelly, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Tonight, Joshua P. Warren is not with us.
He's not. It's just us. We're in charge.
I guess. He's back in Puerto Rico, but a few weeks ago, on August the 8th, he was speaking at Michigan Paracon 6, and that's where we get hour 3 tonight of our Best of Special with Jeff Mudgett, who was the H.H. Holmes great-great-grandson. That was an awesome episode.
Awesome.
Now, you're not going to hear this anywhere else. This is solely for Speaking of Strange listeners, recorded at Michigan Paracon 6, August the 8th, 2015. We toss it to Jeff Mudgett.
Well, thank you very much. Of the events I go to over the years, this is always my favorite. The people in the crowd always seem the friendliest. There's never any anger. There's never any angst about what I try to say on the stage. And I got to tell you, it means a lot to me, and I would love to come for years ahead. So thank you very much. First, let's thank Tim and the guys. I gotta tell you, does Tim have the greatest voice you've ever heard or not? He's amazing. Tracy Warning is going to help me with my video presentation tonight. She has been a participant with me in my talks since my first in Chicago 3 years ago, and she's a great support for me. And anywhere I go that I'm going to be nervous, like now, or I need help, she's always there for me. So thank you, Tracy, please. And of course, Lance. Lance is in the back running all the electronics, the teleprompter, the screens. He's an amazing expert, which without him, I'd be in big trouble right now. The great-great-grandson of the most evil man that ever lived. People routinely ask me, why would you want to tell the world about that? For 2 years, I didn't have an answer. But now I do, and I'm quite proud of it. And before we start on our event tonight, I'd like to tell you why. You read, you see on TV, you see so much about DNA, chromosomes, and how our lives are determined about where we came from. Well, there's no doubt that I came from evil. But that not one member of my family after him ever committed crime, let alone a murder. They were all law-abiding citizens. Two were war heroes. They all paid their taxes. And I like to stand up in front of the world now and be proud of that. Because it's certainly proof that our lives are choices. It has nothing to do about where we came from or what we're made of. Holmes decided to be evil. He could have been Louis Pasteur. He had the highest IQ ever recorded at the University of Michigan Medical School. He could have been Einstein. Instead, he decided to create that horrible place, the murder castle, and torture innocent women who just wanted to come see the World's Fair. And for that, I'm proud. My family proved it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with who we are in our hearts now and the choices we make. But that's enough for today. We're going to do something different, something I've been excited about for a long time. I'm going to swear you all in as my grand jury. This is what I used to do for a living in California. And I'm going to ask you to decide after I present the evidence on stage in trial that we think we can prove H.H. Holmes killed Catherine Eddowes, the third victim of the Ripper Five. But first, I need to give you all a test to clear your mind, so to speak. You remember Sir Isaac Newton under the tree when the apple fell on his head and he had that eureka moment? You remember reading about Archimedes, the fellow that was in his bathtub in ancient Greece, and he discovered displacement because of the water going up and down as he stepped out of the tub? Those were routinely known as eureka moments, when a scientist discovered, by clearing his mind of bias, by eliminating the coincidences we all tend to try to pull out, that they had discovered a scientific theory. I think we can prove the Ripper. Now, you know, every 3 or 4 months, there's one now, you have another author establish a theory that he knows who Jack the Ripper was in order to sell books. My book, Bloodstains, is not about Jack the Ripper. It's about H.H. Holmes. We've all been programmed, our heads, to know that whenever an author stands up on stage, like I'm doing now, and he says, I know who Jack the Ripper was, we all go, uh-huh, yeah, sure. We've heard this 100 times before. But we're going to do it different today. It's not to sell my book. It's not to project a theory. We're going to present the evidence to you and ask you to decide. On my plane ride over, I was watching a speaker at the TED, and he was discussing the value of mathematics. He stood up on stage and he described this piece of paper as 0.001 centimeters thick. Okay? If this piece of paper was big enough, now clear your minds, clear your heads. If I folded a piece of paper this thick, if it was big enough, 50 times, okay? One. 48 more. Is there anyone in the audience who can guess, scientifically, eliminating bias, how thick this piece of paper would be at the 50th fold? Anyone? This piece of paper would stretch from the earth to the sun on the 50th fold. Isn't that amazing? Now that's what we're talking about here today. We're going to ask you to eliminate all the previous theories about Jack the Ripper and just look at the evidence we have on stage. Okay, Tracy. You want to move ahead a little bit? My friends in Hollywood did some recreations of what they think, based on our evidence, it looked like when Holmes killed Catherine Eddowes. Move ahead a little bit, Tracy. When we get to them, you'll be able to see their best efforts. And I think it's a good thing before we start with the direct evidence that you see what the color would have looked like in Whitechapel in London. Here we go. Just open your mind. Startles me every time I see it. The actors did an amazing job, and it's terrifying. It took him about 4 minutes to kill Catherine Eddowes and dissect her abdominal cavity. He removed organs without damaging any of the other bordering organs in her body. He removed her uterus and a kidney.
Shelley, that's a crazy place to leave off, is it not?
Oh, my gosh. I got to find out what happens next.
That's such a random, it's like a uterus.
A uterus and a kidney.
And now we toss to break. We're going to have to find out what comes next in this story. A very special episode of Speaking of Strange, a best of with exclusive audio from Michigan Paracon 6 with Jeff Mudgett continues after the break here on Speaking of Strange. You want to take the first verse, Shelley Wright?
What verse is?
No, she doesn't. Sam Steele, producer of Speaking of Strange with Miss Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop. Shelley, what's up?
I am having so much fun. This is a nail-biter. I cannot wait to find out the rest of this.
What was the outro of that last segment? Her uterus.
Her uterus and her kidney.
And her kidneys. We jump back to the story of H.H. Holmes, America's first serial killer, as told to Speaking of Strange listeners, exclusively recorded at Michigan Paracon at 6 August the 8th on this very special best-of episode of
Speaking of Strange.
Enjoy.
These exhibits brought back memories of my old career. Now, the words you see on the screen now, they're not evidence for us here today. What I wanted you to realize is these are the general words describing the five Ripper murders. How the world has routinely decided, all right, we're going to settle and solve who Jack the Ripper is. We're going to have five murders on screen. That's not how it's done at law. That's not how it's done at real life. We're here today to solve one murder, the murder of Catherine Eddowes, the third of the Ripper Five. I can give you evidence to solve that murder. I have no knowledge of the other four. That will be up to the world to decide whether they want to identify the murder of number three with the other four. Now, to me, that's been the mistake the world has made for over 125 years. Scotland Yard told me they thought number four and number five had been copycats. They thought that 50 years ago. They didn't know if number one had the same MO as the second and third murders. But they knew that number three, Catherine Eddowes, was the murderer associated with the phrase Jack the Ripper. And I'll explain that to you later. All right, Tracy, do you want to move ahead a little bit? To remember at the time, London was the biggest city in the world. There were murders committed in London routinely as there are in Chicago now. The word Jack the Ripper wasn't associated in the press or with the public until after the third murder. The first two had no special identity. They weren't public discourse. They weren't back and forth as the fourth and fifth were after the media decided they could sell papers using Jack the Ripper. And when you really think about it, we're talking about the murder of three individuals by a man, H.H. Holmes, who committed hundreds of murders in Chicago and others in Philadelphia and New York. Exhibit B is my attempt to settle your minds as to the time frame involved. Whenever I give talks, I'm routinely asked, but Holmes couldn't have committed the killings in London. He was in Chicago. He was in Chicago. They didn't travel to London back then. Wrong. They had steamships, not sailing ships, steamships at that time. They used to take passage in New York, and they traveled to Southampton, which was about a half day out of London. This would take about 6.5 days for them to travel. It routinely required a wealthy gentleman. As most of you know, some that read my book, Holmes practically invented life insurance fraud. He'd meet a couple, a wealthy couple. He'd seduce the wife, murder the husband, and then have her place his name on the policy. In the 1880s, he was making $300,000 or $400,000 a year. One of these passages was maybe $300 or $400. I just wanted you to know how easy it was for that wealthy man to travel from New York to London. You can move ahead a little, Tracy. This is the Etruria. This is the ship we think he took that arrived 7 days before the murder we're going to be discussing. The company that owned the Etruria still exists, Penarmo. They still have the passenger list. It was signed by all the passengers. As you all know, Holmes used at least 31 different aliases. When I explained to you how we've identified his handwriting scientifically, and the world accepts where we're going with this evidence, we'll be able to go to Cunard Lines, we'll be able to get that passenger list, we'll run it through the computers at the University of Buffalo Cedar Fox Corporation, and they'll be able to identify exactly which signature, Holmes, and alias he used for that passage. You can move ahead a little. University of Michigan archives on H.H. Holmes. They have a number of documents from him. It's not the year involved in the murder we're talking about. It's not 1888, the year of the Ripper. It's after. But I wanted to use it to prove here today that Holmes routinely traveled to Europe, Paris, Berlin, London, all over. And this letter, as you'll see at the bottom, proves how easy and routinely he thought it. If you read the bottom of this letter to his lawyer, you'll see he said, the New York Herald is, or was a year ago, to be found in only a few places regularly in London. He was complaining that he couldn't read his favorite newspaper while he was in London. As I said, it's not direct evidence of murder, but it explains to you, yes, he traveled to Europe. I'm getting warmed up. This is getting fun. And the good stuff's coming. Just a little easier for you to read the sentence I read to you. You can move on, Tracy. All right, you want to pause on this one, Tracy? I wanted to provide this for your viewing. These are the drawings that the major newspapers of the world were using to illustrate what they thought Jack the Ripper looked like. Now, the two photographs on the top left are H.H. Holmes. The drawing underneath that is the drawing the Chicago Times did of Holmes before his trial in America. You'll notice the hat, the mustache, his posture. The drawings to the right of that were all done by London papers or Paris papers as they attempted to portray the Ripper. What people don't realize is there were 13 eyewitnesses to Jack the Ripper that the London Metropolitan Police and Scotland Yard collected in 1888. Now, can drawings prove murder? No, they can't. But we're going to use those drawings later to show you the evidence we think does prove. Anyone has any questions, don't feel free to raise them while we're talking. This is just an enlargement of the same drawing of Holmes. His posture, his feet, his legs, his hands. I find it an amazing, amazing drawing. Now, pause on this, Tracy. Can you pause? This is the same drawing across from the drawing that the London papers did of who they thought and what they thought Jack the Ripper looked like. Okay. You want to pause, Tracy? In 2006, the BBC and Scotland Yard took those 13 eyewitness testimonies that I just reported to you, and they created a computer composite in 2006 of Jack the Ripper. This is what the computer came up with. Notice the nose, the eyes, the eyebrows, the ears, the chin, the mustache. Try to set aside that it looks like Freddie Mercury from Queen a little bit. But notice those foundations, especially notice the nose for me, please. Okay, Tracy. You want to pause? This is the police photograph of Holmes taken in Philadelphia. Notice the eyes, the ears, the chin. Notice the nose. Notice the eyelids. Okay, Tracy.
All right, Shelley. Notice the ears, the eyes, the eyelids, the chin. Where do you think this is going? I mean, I know you have a little bit of after knowledge here.
I'm thinking that this goes to maybe some eyewitness.
Some similarities. Now, what you might not have heard, there's certain parts of Jeff Mudgett's speech here that basically when he was doing this live a couple weeks ago in Michigan at the Michigan Paracon 6, what it was basically it was a sworn in. The audience got sworn in. So there's a couple of parts that we have edited down, whittled down for time constraints.
Basically, he just sat the jury.
You, the listener, are the jury, and he is presenting a case, more of which we'll find out about. I think it has something to do with the eyes, the nose,
the chin,
and the eyelids.
And the nose. Did we say the nose?
I think we did. When we return on this special episode, a best of Speaking of Strange.
He takes on her
It's a very special best of episode of Speaking of a Strange. I am Sam Steele, producer, sitting with the lovely Miss Shelley Wright. She's coy. I got to give her props on that, that what we call in the biz, that bumper music there. We were trying to think of appropriately, creepy, sinister, and she went deep.
One of my favorites.
One of my favorites. That was Morrissey and Spring-Heeled Jim, which tells the story of a very kind of creepy kind of guy.
Yeah.
Much like H.H. Holmes, we resume the trial or the presentation, the Jeff Mudgett game at Michigan Paracon 6 on August the 8th on this very special episode. You're not going to find this audio anywhere else. This was recorded for Speaking of Strange. Joshua P. Warren was there, and Jeff Mudgett was kind enough to let us record this for this purpose. So we pick up the action at the eyes, the nose, the chin,
the eyelids.
It's Speaking of Strange.
For your viewing ease, set them side by side. 2 weeks ago, I was contacted by the FBI, who had been reviewing my website. They called to say and asked me if any quote-unquote experts had told me to consider the nose in the composite and the photograph. I said, well, no, they hadn't. We had, we had a retired expert from the Scotland Yard who said they were the same man, but never the nose. The FBI agent told me both are broken in the same exact place. And that was conclusive to them that it was the same man. Okay, Trixie. My computer expert morphed the composite into the photograph. Keep an eye on the nose. Pause, please. This is a drawing of Aaron Kuzminski. This is the suspect that most Ripperologists claim was Jack the Ripper. I put him up for you to see how different he was than either the photograph or the composite. When I researched the broken nose, lo and behold, Holmes had had a broken nose. I found that amazing. Okay, Tracy. Want to pause, please? These are the autopsy reports of the five murders. These are probably the most compelling evidence for me of the murders. They represent the experts reviewing, as you know what a pathology is, the victims after the crime, attempting to see from the condition of the body the identity of the murderer. On each, especially Catherine Eddowes' body, these experts reported that the murderer was an expert in medical science, that he was either a doctor or probably a surgeon. Now, we all know that's what Holmes was in America, in Chicago. When you look at over the 100 suspects that history has recorded as possible criminals, as possible rippers, there's maybe two or three that were doctors. These pathology reports establish that if you're going to do this right, you've got to start with those three suspects first, those three medical geniuses and experts. Okay, Tracy. I'll make it a little easier to read some of their quotes on the next page for you. Here you are. You want to pause? But the ordinary surgical cases might not contain such an instrument. There were indications of anatomical knowledge. There were no evidence of a struggle. You want to roll, Tracy? Pause. Obviously, the work was that of an expert, of one at least, who had such knowledge of anatomical or pathological examinations. Pathological examinations, as to be enabled to secure the pelvic organs with one sweep of the knife. Now think about that. You're in the dark, you're in the fog, you're in Whitechapel, on the street, you've just murdered, without a scream, without being detected, and now you're going to dissect your victim in 4 minutes' time. Now tell me, anyone here could do that? It has to have been a doctor or a surgeon. Please roll. Obviously, the work was that of an expert. Catherine Eddowes, you want to pause? Thank you. Oh, one more. Come up a little higher. All right. I would say that someone who knew the position of the kidney must have done it. The womb was cut through horizontally, leaving a stump of 3/4 of an inch. The vagina and cervix of the womb was uninjured. The experts that I talked to about these pathological reports, anatomical, have told me that the thing that rises up in their minds about these reports is that to remove that organ without damaging the bordering organs is practically impossible for even a doctor. And that for a man to have done this in the dark, on the streets, in 4 minutes' time, he had to have been a surgical expert. Okay. Go ahead. For any of you who have studied the Ripper, this is the famous Dear Boss letter. Hold on. This was the first time the phrase Jack the Ripper was seen. It was signed, Yours Truly, Jack the Ripper. First time. It was delivered to the... Oh, you know what I forgot to do? This is my photo of Holmes, my great great grandfather. He likes to watch the audience when I give my talks. The Dear Boss letter was postmarked and received by the Central News Agency of London on September 27th. Keep that date in mind. The letter was forwarded by the media to the Scotland Yard on September 29th. Scotland Yard forbid the media from making the letter public. Catherine Eddowes, the body, her body was found on September 30th, 3 days after this letter was delivered to the news media. Missing an ear. The letter reads like this. Obviously, this is hard to read. Don't mind me giving the trade name. Wasn't good enough to post this before I got all the red ink off my hands. Curse it, no luck yet. They say I'm a doctor now. At first, the police were convinced that the letter was a hoax. But within 24 hours of it being forwarded to them, the double event occurred. There were two murders. The first one was a slash of the throat, and the body was left in that condition, probably because the killer was detected or feared being detected, and he ran off. Now, Catherine Eddowes, he removed the organs from the body. Dear boss, I keep on hearing the police have caught me, but they won't fix me just yet. I have laughed when they look so clever and talk about being on the right track. That joke about leather apron gave me real fits. I am down on whores and I shan't quit ripping them till I do get buckled. Grand work the last job was. I gave the lady no time to squeal. How can they catch me now? I love my work and want to start again. You will soon hear of me with my funny little games. I save some of the proper red stuff in a ginger beer bottle over the last job to write with, but it went thick like glue and I can't use it. Red ink is fit enough, I hope, ha ha. The next job I do, I shall clip the lady's ear off and send to the police officers just for jolly. Wouldn't you? Keep this letter back till I do a bit more work, then give it out straight. My knife's so nice and sharp, I want to get to work right away if I get the chance. Good luck. Yours truly, Jack the Ripper. Now notice, 3 days before the body was discovered, the murder occurred. He describes the next will have her ear removed. And lo and behold, Catherine Eddowes' ear was removed. Okay, Tracy. The police published, there's the signature that we'll be observing very closely in a little bit. The police published a poster the day after the body was discovered around Whitechapel. I'll show you that too. But in it, the police said, if anyone knows the handwriter who wrote this letter, they should be contacted immediately because they believe the author of this letter was the killer, the Jack the Ripper. Now, many ripperologists have said that the author of this letter was a journalist, that the journalist had seen this letter, had seen sales dropping, and had printed this letter out so that the media, the uproar around London would result in sales. But no one has ever claimed one of the journalists was the killer. You want to pause on that? None have ever claimed the author of Dear Boss was the killer, only that they were trying to increase sales. Well, I ask you all, I ask you to eliminate bias and coincidence when we started. You really believe coincidence can explain that that letter came out 3 days before the homicide, describing the condition of the ear removal, and then the body was found with an ear removal as pure coincidence? I have a hard time with that. Go ahead, Tracy. This was a letter that Herman wrote, another from the archives of the University of Michigan. What we decided to do was compare his handwriting in that letter to the one on the Dear Boss.
Now, obviously, Shelley, using our theater of the mind, we obviously can't see the handwriting on the letter, but being that we all have pretty much computers in our pockets, we can easily pull this up and see the handwriting of which he speaks. And because we have looked at this before, we kind of have a little in on what he's talking about. Those two handwriting samples,
yes,
incredibly close.
Yes, they are.
And I believe when we resume, when we come back after the break for the final segment of this very special best of episode of Speaking of Strange, Jeff Mudgett is going to make, he's going to hammer it home.
Oh, yeah.
The final segment of where he leads us to believe in this mock trial that his great-great-grandfather, H.H. Holmes, was, in fact, Jack the Ripper. We're going to continue this right after these words on
Speaking of Strange.
It's a very special episode of Speaking of Strange, a best of with a third act amendment from Jeff Mudgett, who we heard from a couple weeks ago on the show. This is the conclusion of his speech that he gave at Michigan Paracon 6 just a few weeks ago, August the 8th, in Michigan, I would assume. Wrapping it up on
Speaking of Strange.
I forgot one thing. 2 days after the London Metropolitan posted the poster I'll show you, they received another postcard, a postcard this time. It's called Saucy Jack. Same handwriting. And in the postcard, he describes the two murders, and he describes the Dear Boss letter. Now, this is before the letter was made public on the news media, in the papers. Now, tell me. The police, the London Metropolitan, the Scotland Yard, they would have been watching every journalist that saw this letter. The chances that that was a journalist and not the killer are slim to none. Okay, start comparing to yourself the handwriting on the Ripper letter and on the Holmes letter. Okay, Tracy. Pause. We took the two letters to the British Library. The British Library is like the Smithsonian. It's like the National History Museum in Washington, D.C. It's their big... I mean, they've got stuff from Cleopatra, the kings, everything. It's an amazing place if you ever get a chance. We took the letters to them. They recommended their handwriting expert, Miss Margaret Webb. Please roll. She compared the Ripper, the Dear Boss, and the Holmes. You want to pause? On the balance of probabilities, it is my professional opinion that all pieces of Ripper handwriting above submitted for comparison are from the same hand. The main similarities are in the construction of individual letters. The height measurements of the letters are similar in that small measurement letters sit alongside larger ones. The professional stuff that I really don't understand, except that her conclusion was it was the same. However, having practiced law, I knew that in 1986, the Supreme Court had ruled, had decided, that handwriting comparisons, while 88% of the time accurate, were not accurate enough that they were going to put a man to death over those opinions. They needed more. So the FBI, so the Post Office, so the Department of Justice, they hired a corporation at the University of Buffalo called Cedar Fox to run a computer program which could conduct these same comparisons. Well, I contacted them to see if they were willing to compare Dear Boss and the Holmes letter. Okay, Tracy. Freeze. This is the results they came back with. 97%. That's what they concluded, that they're the same. They also told me if I would fund their effort, they needed to change the font in the computer program to match that at the turn of the century. That if I did, and they had the chance to run it, they were reasonably sure the results would come back 100% the same. So now here we have the experts, the computer, telling you that Holmes was the author of the Dear Boss letter. The same letter which predicted the next victim having her ear removed, Catherine Eddowes. The first letter that used the phrase Jack the Ripper. Okay, Tracy. Pause. All right. Now you're my grand jury, all right? We've looked at experts' opinion and conclusions. We've looked at the computers. Now I just want you to look with your own eyes. Look at the yours truly. My computer expert tried to morph on the bottom, but the middle two are the yours truly comparisons I want you to make as human beings with eyes and ability to make conclusions and judgments. See what you think. We've got 88% from an expert. We've got 97% from a computer. I'm asking you here today, you can't give me the last 3% looking at those comparisons yourself? All right, Tracy. Pause. So much in the news today, you see an author, like I said, trying to sell books and with a theory about Jack the Ripper. This handwriting evidence and who wrote Dear Boss being Jack the Ripper isn't me. I didn't make this up. This isn't my theory to sell books. It has nothing to do with that. This is the poster the London Metropolitan Police put out before they allowed it to go public in the papers. That's the Dear Boss letter in the center. I know it's hard to make out, but that's the same letter that we were looking at, that I read to you. Read the bottom sentence from the London Metropolitan and Scotland Yard. They put this poster out knowing that the author of that letter was Jack the Ripper. They knew that whoever could identify the handwriting, they'd solve the crime. This is original poster, 1888, September. Okay. These are some of the, in a grand jury, I'm allowed to present hearsay, testimony, and evidence to you, not in a real trial. Now, Scotland Yard and their computer, they estimated that the killer was 5'7", 140 to 160 pounds, and from 25 to 35 years of age. Holmes in 1888 was 5'7", approximately 150 pounds, and 27 years old. Scotland Yard, in their own book on Jack the Ripper, referred to the killer as a medical maniac. Scotland Yard described the author of the Dear Boss and From Hell letters as an American trying to seem English. I'll give you an example. Dear Boss. Boss was the term used by the unions in New York and Philadelphia. It wasn't used in London. Scotland Yard stated the author of those letters possessed more factual information regarding the crimes than the London media had disclosed at the time. That's them telling you they knew the author of that letter. It wasn't a hoax. It wasn't a journalist trying to sell. That was the killer. Scotland Yard described investigating in 1888 an American doctor attempting to sell skeletons to medical universities in the greater London area. Any of you who've read my book know that that's how Holmes made a portion of his living in Chicago. He'd murder in the Murder Castle basement. Fillet, it's a terrible word to use for a human body, but he'd pull the flesh off the bones, he'd attach each bone, and then sell the skeletons to medical schools around the country. A year ago, I was doing a book signing in Iowa, and one of the professors from the medical school came up to me and told me that they had removed the skeleton they had in their medical museum because they were convinced that they had bought it from Holmes. Okay, Tracy. I don't know if any of you are aware, but last year I got to talk at the TED in Victoria, and it's an amazing event for a speaker. You have this auditorium that stretches up, and there's thousands of people right in your face, and you walk out on this pier, and the teleprompters are all at your feet. And they told me it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me. I had 8 minutes to prove who Jack the Ripper was. Well, thank you, 8 minutes, and it was rough. Now, at the end, we swore that audience in as well. The managers of the TED gave out 1,000 remote control clickers, 1,000-something, and we asked them, after my evidence, whether they thought the Holmes Holmes was Jack the Ripper, and you can see the results. Okay, Tracy. This, to me, is why Jack the Ripper was never solved. Holmes simply got on a ship and went home. When it got too hot, when he had enough, when his vacation was over, he bought a ticket home. And he came back to Chicago. And then he watched, reading the London papers go crazy about how for years, they couldn't solve the crimes. That isn't the original ticket, obviously. That's one that I took from that time, what it looked like to buy a ticket. But that's my solution to why it's never been solved. And it's my effort to give a hats off to the London police and Scotland Yard. They had a tough job. They didn't know anything about H.H. Holmes. They didn't know anything about Chicago. They couldn't have solved him being in Chicago. You want to pause? Okay, Tim, I think we're ready.
Do you, grand jury, based on the evidence presented here today, do you, the jury, find probable cause that H.H. Holmes did, in fact, murder Catherine Eddowes? By show of hands, please cast your vote. This is a yes vote, you believe. Overwhelming majority of that.
I know most of you know this. Probable cause is the standard of yes or no that the police use, the courts use, to establish an arrest warrant. It generally means 51 to 49 and more. It has to be a feeling of guilt, but it's not the standard of proof we use at trial. So your show of hands was very encouraging that you believe there was probable cause to allow me to ask the judge for a warrant to arrest Holmes, assuming he was still alive.
So based on that, let's take this one step further against you. The grand jury, you based on the evidence presented here today, do you, the jury, find proof beyond a reasonable doubt that H.H. Holmes did in fact murder Catherine Eddowes? By show of hands, raise your hands.
Now think about this. Reasonable doubt, as you know, that's the standard of guilt for sending a man to death. It means you're 90-some percent. The Supreme Court's tried to identify it 100 times. They never have. It's 90-some percent. You're reasonably certain. Now, the way to do this, and I'll ask Tim to ask you one more time. The way to do this is, now assume the evidence I just showed you is about a murder today. Wipe out all the stuff you've written, you've read about Jack the Ripper. Wipe out the stuff you've seen on TV, Johnny Depp, all those things. Wipe it out. Assume this evidence was about a murder today. Then let Tim ask you one more time.
All right. Based on the evidence presented here today, do you, the juror, find proof beyond a reasonable doubt that H.H. Holmes did, in fact, murder Catherine Eddowes? By show of hands, please.
Well, thank you very much. That's very encouraging, and I got to tell you, your attention and allowance of me to go over and over the evidence before you today has made my day, and I'm very encouraged. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your support.
And there you have it, wrapping up a very special best of edition of Speaking of Strange, what we're calling the Bloodstains edition. That was some very interesting stuff. That was Jeff Mudgett from Michigan Paracon 6. And basically, you got to be in the jury, so to speak, as he was the barrister. And he explained his theory, which after hearing it, I am a convert. I am a believer on how his great-great-grandfather, H.H. Holmes, could have, in fact, have been Jack the Ripper. We want to thank Mr. Mudgett so much for allowing us to record that from August the 8th at the con in Michigan. Thanks for Joshua P. Warren for grabbing that audio. And thank you to Miss Shelley Wright from Wright's Coin Shop for assisting me in putting it together, this best of edition of Speaking of Strange. Until the next time, you are commanded!